And on we go. When you get to the end of Casey Wilson's new memoir titled The Wreckage of My Presence, we learn where the title came from, an addiction meeting she attended. Her drug of choice was sugar. She writes, "At the end of my first meeting, as everyone stood up to leave, the leader for the week issued an edict that has never left me. He gestured to the empty coffee cups and water bottles on the floor next to our seats and said, incredibly casually, over his shoulder, almost as an afterthought, 'Hey guys, don't forget to take the wreckage of your presence.' The wreckage of my presence. The wreckage of my presence. How could I forget?" Now, just because I read the end of the book doesn't mean I gave anything away. The memoir and essays collection is full of surprises and twists and laughs and insights. Yes, the book covers her career highs and lows, her time on the cult favorite show Happy Endings, and a difficult 2-year stint on SNL. But the book is also very personal, peppered with hilarious retellings mashed up against really harsh moments of her life, her struggles with postpartum depression, her mother's untimely death, and just the day-to-day struggles of being a working actor over the years. And sometimes the funny and the serious collide. Here's Casey reading from the audiobook about her lifelong relationship with anger.
"I may seem mild-mannered and sweet on the surface, but just underneath, I'm seething. I didn't always label it as anger. My dad says as a child I was challenging. A handful, raved my grandfather. Emotional, enthused my Aunt Anne. I paid no attention to my mom's child-rearing techniques from her dog-eared copy of Raising Your Spirited Child. I was too busy screaming at the fellow 9-year-olds in our neighborhood who hadn't learned their lines for my backyard production of Cats the sequel, rights pending. My parents begged me to go easy on our neighbor, Kristen. Her parents had recently gotten divorced and her dad was living on a houseboat. Did I have to use the word fired? Couldn't I let her have a small role? Fine, I yelled. She can play the telephone. Kristen would go on to dazzle a dozen citizens of Alexandria, Virginia, with how long she could remain crouched downstage right with her arm draped over her head as the human receiver and allow me to talk on her. I had, naturally, taken over the starring role she had vacated. Anger, I realized for the first time, could mean power."
And Casey Wilson joins us now. Hi, Casey.
Hi. Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited that you're here. How long had you been thinking about writing a book like this?
Honestly, since I was quite young. My mom had copies of Irma Bombeck's kind of her meditations on just kind of being a stay-at-home mom to some degree that were comedic lying around, and I was reading them when I was like 12 and laughing, and always loved David Sedaris's books and Nora Ephron's. And then as I got older, I read a collection of essays from Phoebe Robinson, and I just thought, I really want to do this. And hopefully at 38, 37, when I started writing it, I have something to say and can hopefully entertain and say something a bit deeper was my goal.
There's always a moment when you're working on a project like this when you have to decide, you know, is this story too something? Is it too personal? Is it too upsetting? Is it too privilege-y? How did you decide what to include and not to include? Did you have certain metrics for yourself?
I did. I think it's a tricky needle to thread. And as someone who wants to be liked all the time, that was a sad consideration I had to factor in. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, I tried to be someone that is self-aware. And so I didn't want it to come off as, God, she's really divulging every secret of her family's, nor did I want my family to feel that way. So I really took time to kind of read everything to anyone I mentioned, except for one person, to just sort of make sure no one was surprised. So not my intention for anyone to feel like our family was laid bare, but I did want to tell my mom's story who passed away, and which is tricky when someone has passed, because mm-hmm. I wanted to give her so much honor while also telling the story of a complex mom who worked. And And then certainly the privilege of it all. I've grown up with privilege, but I tried to satirize it in the way that I could while also acknowledging it and giving the due that I'm not here by myself.
Your family does feature prominently in the book, and you dedicate it to your brother, Fletcher. Why did you dedicate the book to him?
Oh my gosh, he'll be so thrilled you asked that, Allison. I dedicated it to him because my parents were such huge figures and loud and screaming one minute and laughing the next minute and very funny. And my brother always said he had to raise his hand to speak at the table. And he honestly has expressed in a funny way. He's like, you never include me in any of your work. And so I thought, you know, this book is about growing up. And I think your sibling is the one person that has experienced like the marinade of your childhood. And in fact, the person you really will know from hopefully the time you're born to the time you pass. You know, it's one of the longest relationships of our life. And my brother is, I just love him so dearly. And I thought I really want to dedicate this to him.
My guest is Casey Wilson. The name of her book is The Wreckage of My Presence. So I read the end of the book first, where we learn about where the title of it came from. And that section is actually one of the more serious sections in the book, because you discussed discovering your mom had struggles with addiction that you didn't know about while she was alive. And then you were also exploring your own struggle with potential food addiction and how long it took you to understand those things. How did you approach writing this really tough essay?
You know, I made it the last essay because I kind of wanted the reader to go on the journey that I went on, where I had this magical childhood with incredibly supportive parents, almost to the maybe detriment of me and my kind of, I had dysmorphic confidence, high, low confidence I probably shouldn't have had. But I think, you know, there was also some really kind of darker spots to my childhood. And my mom, who was a feminist leader and really a wonderful mother and charismatic personality, but almost took on so much and then would have to kind of retreat to her bedroom a lot for like weekends at a time. And it was really confusing, but I also didn't see her like soaring, or I really didn't know what was going on, to be honest. And that darkness would kind of descend on our family because she was so effervescent at all other points. And so by the end, hopefully, you know, I've shared my journey of, you know, there's comedic essays and dating and acting and all of that. But I didn't find out, like you said, about my mom's addiction until I was pregnant with my second son. And my dad told me that, you know, there was a missing piece to my childhood, which I knew there was. And so it actually wasn't so much of a shock as a relief to know, you know, what you're seeing, you're not crazy. There was something going on. But also I just was old enough to feel such intense compassion and empathy as a mom for my own mom and for what I think so many women go through, and trying to that insane phrase of like women having it all. It's like comes at a cost often.
Yeah, the way you describe your mom is she's the mom who would do anything for her kids, and you now you kind of understand how she was able to with the help of of Ritalin, which is tough. It's tough to think about, you know, especially when you become a mom. I know when I became a mom, you start to think about, oh my God, what did my parents do? My parents, you know, people complain, but oh my God, my parents were amazing. You know, you have that moment.
Yes, and you really don't have that until your child is like screaming in your face, and you're reminded of when I like pulled out two sconces in my house because my parents wouldn't let me go to TGI Fridays when I was in high school. There's more empathy there.
The first essay takes explores your early adventures of trying to break into acting in New York City. I would love it if you read a short selection from this chapter. It's about your time as Susan Sarandon's assistant's assistant.
An illustrious job. Yes, so here it is. Thank you for asking. We had a lot to juggle, and this is just to set up when I say we, my dearest friend June Diane Raphael, who's the actress now on Grace and Frankie, and we got our start together, and she was with me in the trenches. We had a lot to juggle between our hair care sales job, rehearsals for our two-woman sketch comedy show, and our internship for one of my all-time favorite actresses, Susan Sarandon. Twice a week, we would make our way to her gorgeous office in Union Square and run errands and mail packages and so on. Our supervisor was Susan's main assistant, a man who, for reasons unknown, was in possession of Famke Janssen's dog, who always sat atop his lap while he rolled calls. My main task was to sit behind him, open Susan's fan mail, and when appropriate, send back a pre-signed glossy headshot. I say when appropriate because it wasn't always appropriate to send a photo of Susan sexily lounging on a pickup truck in a still from Bull Durham when the fan mail was written by a man on death row. Many people on death row wrote to Susan because of her role in Dead Man Walking, and the letters were absolutely heartbreaking. They would tell their stories and often include photos of themselves or photos of their family. And I knew my job as fourth assistant was limited in scope and firm in its parameters. However, these letters, they were devastating, and I couldn't help but respond, as Susan, first a thinking of you here, then a this will all be over soon there. Day by day, I became more and more emboldened, and in no time, my Susan started crafting paragraph-long empathetic responses. I figured this was good for her brand. Fake Susan was also pocketing the change in small bills that often accompanied the letters from suburban women hoping to ensure a headshot would be sent. It was a thrill to see the change tumble out of every 10th envelope. The real Susan didn't need the money, I rationalized.
That was Casey Wilson reading from her book, The Wreckage of My Presence. First of all, have you spoken to Susan Sarandon since that time?
You know, so I wrote her a letter before the book came out. I was in a movie with her, and I made the executive decision because I hadn't met her during my time there. She was filming a movie, and I was shortly fired after all of that. I made the decision to simply meet her as a peer and not divulge that I had worked for her, which was strange. It was strange, but she just wrote me actually such a beautiful letter that I'm actually, I don't know why I'm almost crying. It was really beautiful to hear her kind of acknowledge my mom and the work she had done in feminist space. And she was just so generous to have read it and laughed and get a kick out of it. So that was so nice to receive.
Is there something from that time that now that you are in the business, now that you are a peer of someone like Susan Sarandon, that has stuck with you, that time as an assistant's assistant?
My gosh. So much has stuck with me. I mean, mainly just how hard she worked and that it's and I know when actors are like, our job isn't easy, you're like disgusted, because I am too when I hear it. Not that she's running around saying that. It's like, come on. Not that bad. But I will say, like, you know, she fucking worked her, excuse me, sorry.
This is all of it on WNYC. My guest is Casey Wilson.
So
we're talking about, that's okay. We just had to reset. Just got to reset. You were emotional.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. You were talking about
how hard
it is. Don't worry about it. It's all good. We're grownups. We just reset. That's cool.
Yes. So, how hard I feel like Susan worked and so many women that I worked for worked, that kind of set me up hopefully for more success of just how hard you have to work.
So, you know, moving on from earlier jobs and quote unquote internships, you go straight and you were very honest and open about your time at SNL, which was not the greatest time for you. And, you know, it's so funny when you go back and you sort of Google people who had short stints on SNL, they included people like, oh, Jenny Slate and Robert Downey Jr. and Sarah Silverman and you. Everybody on that list is fine, just fine now. But, you know, it's interesting when you think about it. Oh, gosh, all these people are superstars now. How did you feel at that time about not having your contract renewed, even though it hadn't been the best professional experience?
You know, I think it's so hard at that age. I grew up wanting to be on SNL. I mean, it's kind of the Olympics of comedy in a way. Mm-hmm. And so when I got on, I was so thrilled. But then, you know, ultimately to not be asked back, you feel like you failed. And to fail at a dream, I think that looms that large and so specific, it was just so heartbreaking. Even though, like you said, I was very miserable and I felt kind of like I was almost like a masquerading at something. You know, I'm not. My clearly strengths don't lie in sketch performing. I'm an actress and I just, it was devastating, but at the same time, I actually talked to Sarah Silverman afterwards and she was saying it really is going to be like a broken bone and it will heal stronger. And I found that to be true. Although of course I still look back and I'm like, why couldn't you do it? But I just couldn't. And that is the truth. Even though it was the next job I got, I actually met my husband and I wouldn't have my kids quite literally if I hadn't been let go. So you have to kind of just see the greater picture, but you cannot see that when you're 26.
And that is a perfect tease. As we go to break, we'll hear more about where you met your husband and about the cult hit Happy Endings. My guest is Casey Wilson. The name of her book is The Wreckage of My Presence. We'll have more with Casey after a quick break. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Casey Wilson. The name of her new memoir is The Wreckage of My Presence. So in the book, you penned just really lovely chapter about your time on the show Happy Endings, about six friends in Chicago. It's a little more arch than the Friends Friend show. Now, this show has a cult following. Casey, when did you realize people were obsessed with the show?
My gosh, it's so funny. About a year into it getting on the air, it was kind of this very kind of little engine that could TV show. My husband created it, actually. And we were loving doing it so much. And we were like, oh, no one's watching this. And very few people were at the time. But the people that watched it were just somewhat rabid about it and so into it. And it's a show chock full of like hard jokes, but it has some heart. And people were rewatching and rewatching. And then that audience has really grown. And there's a lot of anger surrounding the fact that we were canceled after three seasons. And that I appreciate, quite frankly, but, you know, people really, really related to the show in such a kind of beautiful, wonderful way that was very unexpected.
What headspace were you in when you got that gig?
Oh, my gosh. I was just frantic. You know, I'd been let go from SNL. I was lying around on the couch, and I watched about 17 seasons of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So I was both in an inspired headspace and not a great one. And I auditioned for the show, and, you know, I just was so feeling, maybe wrongly so, but like, if I don't get a job soon, I'll never work again. And I still feel like that sometimes as an actor. But once I got it, I felt like, oh, this is where I am meant to be, doing this type of comedy show. And I'll say this for my husband and the writers, they really let the three women on the show shine comedically, which is just not always the case on a network show. You know, you're like the finger-wagging wife or whatever. And I met Damon Wayans Jr., who's just one of the greatest comedians of our time, and Adam Pally, and the whole cast was so funny and great. And I just felt like, oh, this is where I'm meant to be and where I'm meant to shine. And then, you know, I slept my way to the middle with my husband. And here we are.
I have to ask on behalf of fans, possible reboot? The rebooting everything. Have you guys talked about it all?
We have. And it sounds so boring to say, but a lot of the creators' contracts are like at different studios, so much is always trying to be worked out. But I feel like something might be coming. But then we kind of ask ourselves, is there something to just being something that people really, really enjoyed and loved, and it's now on Netflix and they can watch again? Does it feel always a bit like off, almost like a mirage when you redo something? I don't know the answer to that. But so I think yes and no.
You write very lovingly about your husband, but you also spend time writing about To All the Boys I've Loved Before in sort of this very refreshing way to read. Why was it important to you to include these past relationships, and what do you hope some one young woman reading it might get from your experiences?
Oh my gosh. Well, you're very generous to say it was refreshing. I just sort of first and foremost thought it was funny. You know, I just am so someone, you know, I fall in love with a guy, and one day many of them ended up being like, you know, lovely guys who were gay that I didn't realize, but I still pursued. Just, I was all over the map, and I love love. And I also did things that I'm not proud of, and I had experiences that you're just like, oh my Lord. So I hope anyone taking away, I don't even know if, maybe don't do what I did, I would say. Nothing too dark occurred. So I felt I could write it with kind of a comedic lens, thankfully. But I certainly was not afraid to sleep with people on a first date. You know, all the things you shouldn't do that I realize now.
My guest is Casey Wilson. The name of the book is The Wreckage of My Presence. And it's so interesting to talk to you about this because, you know, we're going back and forth between very funny and also very serious topics. But the book does that in a really interesting way. And, you know, there's this moment in the book, you know, when your son, you're married, you have these two kids, and one of your sons, you know, the word all is not thriving, which like puts fear into the heart of any mother to hear that. And you ultimately find out that your son, Max, has celiac disease, and you struggle with self-blame for not figuring it out because he'd been losing weight and having all kinds of difficulties. I'd like to play a little section from this essay from your audiobook. This is Casey Wilson.
Now, I don't mean to make this about me, but it wasn't about me. It had nothing to do with my failure as a mother, and that's something I've had to reckon with. Why was I so hard on myself? Why are we mothers so hard on ourselves? and there's no concrete answer. But with each passing day, as his health improves, so too does my mental health and sense of self. I'm beginning to accept that this was the start of our journey, and while it wasn't what I would have hoped, it's what happened, and that's okay. Where Max and I are now is beyond my wildest imagination. We have rebuilt, or more built. It's been the greatest gift I have ever received. This diagnosis and this recovery, a weight has been lifted off my heart. The other day, during Zoom kindergarten, in which I am also enrolled, his teacher asked the kids to name something they like in their room that starts with the letter M. Max's hand shoots up, his eyes shining and twinkling. She calls on him. It only takes him about 9 minutes for him to unmute himself, and he answers proudly, "Me. What I like in this room is me." I nearly weep.
Casey, you sound like you were almost crying in the recording of that. Was it hard?
It was. Even hearing back, I'm like, wow. It was just such a journey, you know, and when something's going on with your children, it's so painful. Anything socially or medically, or it's just so difficult. And I think we got so lucky that we had an answer that, you know, kind of frankly, like easily rectified, which is not eating gluten. But I just have so much empathy for any parent. It's just so hard when your kids are suffering or unhappy. It really is a weight on your heart.
In the books, you have this very funny section when you're talking about you are sort of seeking spirituality and how much money and time you will throw at it and trying to get your kitchen to be in a certain state of balance and everything like that. It's so very funny. A lot of talk about mason jars. You'll have to read it. When you think about what's good about seeking spirituality and then the parts of seeking spirituality that aren't so good, how did you figure out how to balance it and how, you know, really what you were looking for?
You know, I've always been a seeker. And I think in my 20s, my life was a bit chaotic. And then my mom passed, kind of a weird time before I was married or I had a life of my own. And I just started seeking. And I think the downside of it is that you sort of give power to whomever you're paying money to, both because you're paying money and you want to get something out of it, but also I did feel very lost, so I'm hanging on these every words of, and some more accredited than others, Allison. And and then you hear things sometimes you don't want to hear, and but then you want it to be true, because otherwise, can you take the other great thing they said? And I do think over time, I have found good therapy to probably be the most concrete answer for me. I'll still dabble in a tarot card. Now, don't get me wrong. I absolutely will, and a psychic and an astrologer. But I think you just, somewhat, I'm on a spiritual path that is a bit more, I think, inward, in the sense that I'm trying to be my own spiritual advisor and just go off intuition instead of ignoring my own intuition and asking a stranger in a strip mall what they would do.
The name of the book is The Wreckage of My Presence. It was written by Casey Wilson. Casey, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your show and I love the meditation.
Excellent. Have a great day,
Casey. 1 minute meditation is genius. Thank you.
Up next, parents, we are looking at the science of raising decent human beings. We want to hear from you. Are you dealing with new challenges as families try to unlearn some habits from the pandemic? Or maybe you need some advice on behavioral issues? We have the author of the book, How to Raise Kids Who Aren't A-Holes, coming up next.